Good morning, everybody. So as Angela said, my name is Nathan. I am the transitional lead pastor here at The River, and welcome to the fifth week of a series we are calling Faith Without a Script. And so throughout this series, what we've been doing is we've been exploring what it means when God doesn't follow our script. And by our script, I mean when we decide how our story should go. And then we tell God, hey, here's how my life's going to be. And one of the easiest ways to know that you've written a script for God is when you start looking at your watch. Because sometimes we like to tell God what to do, but a lot of us have gotten a step better at that. We really do go, God, I just want to pray your will be done as long as you get it done by next week. And it's because we want to set the pace for our lives. Which means sometimes we're finding ourselves saying, whoa, God, you got to pump the brakes there. I'm not ready to do that yet. And maybe when I get a little older, maybe when I retire, then I can do it. But not right now. Other times, we're going, hey, come on, God, pick up the pace, pick up the pace. I am ready to go right now. What are you doing? In both cases, we tend to be looking at God and going, God, I think you're great. But your timing needs some work. So here's an idea. Here's my timeline instead. We can just do that. And today what we're going to do is we're going to meet two different people who both discover Jesus' timing isn't going to be working on their timetables. And as always, what I want you to do is these are familiar stories to you, but I want you to be able to try to kind of clear your mind and put yourself there in the moment. So you're in the crowd, you are watching everything unfold in real time, you don't know what's going to happen next. And I think the story will surprise you. This is Luke 8. So there's a man, his name is Jairus. He's the leader of a local synagogue, that's kind of like a church of that day. And he comes and he falls at Jesus' feet. And he's like, Jesus, please, you have to come home with me. You got to understand, my daughter, she is 12 and she's dying. So the story starts out pretty hard. Like, we're starting with everyone's worst nightmare. Parents, this is your baby. Students, this is your friend. That they are laying there, that they are slowly slipping away on you, and there's nothing you can do about it. And if you've ever been around death, you know it is terrifying, and it just makes you feel so, so helpless. But then you hear about Jesus. And at that point, Jairus doesn't care about his position in the synagogue, and this may get him fired. He doesn't care about how dignified he looks. He is pushing through the crowd. He falls at Jesus' feet, and he says, please, I don't care. Just come and save my girl. So Jesus goes with him. And as he goes, he is surrounded by crowds. Because as you may know, Jesus was a celebrity at this point. I mean, probably the biggest celebrity in the country. So crowds are following him everywhere by the thousands. And if you've ever been in a crowd trying to get anywhere, you know you just kind of shuffle along. And at this point, if you are Jairus, you know what you're doing. You're trying to push people. You're like, hey, move, gain weight. You got to get, hey, we are coming through. I've got a dying daughter. Please move, move, move. You're trying to push this along. But then, verse 43, a woman in the crowd, she's suffered for 12 years, and she's had constant bleeding, and she can't find a cure. And so coming up behind Jesus, she touches just the fringe of his robe, and immediately the bleeding stops. And so does Jesus. Who touched me? And this is one of my, this is going to get to one of my favorite responses in all of Scripture, because it's so us. Everybody denies it. Everybody's like, what, me? It's probably him over there. And Peter pulls just a beautifully Peter quote, which is, Jesus, bro, what are you talking about? We are literally surrounded by 1,000 people. Everybody in the world is touching you. And Jesus is like, no. Someone deliberately touched me, for I felt the healing power go out from me. And now Jesus isn't moving at all. He's looking around the crowd. He's looking for that one person in a sea of people. Meanwhile, Jairus is standing there watching the clock. Come on, come on, come on. Verse 47. When the woman realizes she can't stay hidden anymore, she begins to tremble and she falls to her knees. And the crowd sits and they listen. They hear her explain her whole story about why she had touched him and that she had been immediately healed. And Jesus says, "My beautiful daughter, your faith has made you well. You can go in peace." You hear this woman, she comes forward, she is telling her story, and she says, "Jesus, for years, 12 years, I have suffered. For 12 long years, I have watched doctors fail time and time again. I've carried this pain and no one can fix it. And then I reach out, I touch the edge of your robe. And I don't know, I was healed." And I love the fact that Jesus publicly affirms her faith. "Your faith made you well, my daughter." But that brings us back to a story we kind of have forgotten about. Jairus, who also has a daughter that is currently dying and not being healed because Jesus is spending his time talking to this lady. Can you imagine how Jairus must be feeling? Because Jesus is supposed to be coming along and healing his dying daughter. But now he's sitting and he's listening to this lady tell her whole life story. And the longer the conversation goes, the harder it has to be for Jairus. Because the more Jesus talks and talks and talks, the more the clock talks and talks and talks. And with every second, it's a second closer to his daughter's death. I sometimes wonder if Jairus was thinking, does he even care? Does he care about me or my daughter? He's just, we could do this later. Why? Because Jesus isn't operating at Jairus' speed. And when we look back at our lives, I think most of us have had that moment too. That moment or that situation where we're going, "God, what are you doing? Like, why aren't you hurrying this along? I am hurting right now." And it seems like God's just kind of moving at his own pace. And part of the reason we try so hard to control the timing of things is because we're afraid. We're afraid of what might happen. What might happen if we don't have control? I mean, if we're going to be fully honest, we're afraid of something like verse 49. That while Jesus is still having this conversation with this lady, a messenger from the home of Jairus comes up and he says, "Hey, I'm sorry. She's gone. You might as well come home. There's no use troubling Jesus anymore." And there it is. The thing Jairus was afraid would happen. The very reason he wanted Jesus to hurry. And now his daughter's dead. Jesus waited too long. Now it's all over. And all the while, he sees Jesus and he's still over there just having this conversation, just chatting away with this lady. Like, honest to goodness, like, not trying to think as church people, if you are Jairus in this moment, how do you feel about Jesus? Yeah, yeah, probably so. Verse 50. But when Jesus heard what happened, he said to Jairus, "Hey, don't be afraid. Just have a little bit of faith. She's going to be healed." And so they continue on. They arrive at his house, but Jesus isn't going to let anybody go in except for Peter, John, James, and the girl's father and mother. But by this point, the house is already filled with people weeping and wailing for this lost girl. But there's that word again. Faith. And I don't know about you, but I feel like this is one of, like we talk about a lot of commandments. I feel like this is one of the hardest commandments in Scripture. Don't be afraid. Things are going bad, and it's just like, don't be afraid. Just have a little faith. Things will be fine. I was like, I don't know. Things don't feel very fine right now. Like, fear feels very reasonable. I mean, the mourners have already gathered at the house. Like, the story's over. But Jesus says to the people who are mourning, no, stop, stop, stop your weeping. She's not dead. She's only asleep. And the crowd was amazed at his wisdom and brilliance as God. Like, no, this is actually the second story I've preached since I've been here where the crowd literally laughed at God. Like, they laughed at him because they're like, no, 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 she's dead. Because this is the point where Jesus had taken them just one step beyond what their faith could handle. And when that happens, sometimes we just laugh in his face. He's like, okay, yeah, I get it. Sick people, yeah, you can help them recover. Blind people, okay, cool. Yeah, you can probably make them see. But Jesus, dead is dead. Verse 54. So Jesus took her by the hand and he said in a loud voice, my child, get up. And at that moment, her life returned and she immediately stood up. And Jesus said, hey, can you give her something to eat? And just like that, the thing Jairus thought was the end wasn't actually the end at all. You see, Jesus wasn't late. He just was operating at a different speed than what Jairus wanted him to. And that's what makes this story so challenging for us, because it makes us ask this question of what happens when Jesus doesn't operate by our scripts or by our clocks? Because the more I read Scripture, the more I realize God's timing seldom operates in the way we think it should. Just like Jairus, sometimes we are raring to go, and God says, no, 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 you got to stop. A few weeks ago, we talked about Joseph. He was given a dream. But between that dream, he spent 13 years in slavery and prison before his dream was fulfilled. Last year, we talked about David. David was anointed king, but he waited 14 long years in the wilderness being hunted before he was actually crowned king. And both had moments where they were like, God, why are you not moving faster? The Psalms are full of them. But you see, God wasn't just preparing the circumstances around them. God was preparing them. During their transitions, Joseph learned humility and trust through suffering. And David learned a dependence on God even when he was out in the wilderness. So what felt like wasted time in the moment actually really wasn't wasted at all. The waiting was part of what prepared them for success. And I think that's one of the lessons that's just always tough to learn in transitions, both as individuals and as a church. Because when we're waiting, what do we focus on? We focus on the finish line. We focus on when we get what we want, when we get to take that big retirement, it's just around the corner, when we get to find the ideal spouse, when we get to hire the next pastor, when we get to finally see our child graduate. And we become so focused on the destination that we miss what God might be doing along the journey. What if transitions in our life aren't a waste of time? And what if the greatest joy that God has isn't the goal that we get to, but growing closer to him along the way? Now, on the flip side, we can take that a little bit too far. Because sometimes God doesn't tell us to wait. Sometimes God tells us, you got to move. And then we tell God, no, how about we wait? I mean, think about Jonah. Jonah was happy where he was. And God says, I need you to get up, and I need you to go to Nineveh. Jeremiah, he's a prophet. He felt too young. And he felt, quite frankly, just unprepared. He didn't have the information. He didn't have the wisdom. And here's what God said, Jeremiah 1:7. Love this verse. God says, don't make excuses. You don't get to say, I'm too young. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to go wherever I send you, and you are going to say whatever I tell you. So often we want, I do, I'm a planner. I want the full schedule. I want all of the details before we move. But God doesn't always give us the whole timeline. More often he says, hey, don't be afraid. Just have a little bit of faith. It'll be fine. Go where I send you. Say what I tell you. Because faith isn't about us setting the pace for God. It's about trusting him enough to follow. So the question isn't whether we want to wait or whether we want to move. The question is, are we willing to give up what we want to move at the pace God is asking of us? As we turn to our time of reflection, I just want to invite us to think about our own lives. Because I know in talking with you, some of you are like, man, I am in a season of waiting. I have been praying, I've been hoping, I've been wondering, what is God doing? When is he going to move? And for others, it's like, man, I feel God inviting me to take a step forward, but I'm not sure what that looks like, and I'm not sure where it leads, and I'm uncomfortable, and I'm dragging my feet right now. Whichever side you land on, I hope these questions will allow you to process through where God has you. First question, where do I sense God is at work in my life right now, even if I don't fully understand his timing? Number two, where is one area in my life where I can choose trust over control? And number three, what might God be teaching me or preparing me for in this season? So let's take a moment, just process through that, and then the band will continue.